Okay, I should be live. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the May 9th live stream where we're going to cover your weekly wins. It's great to have you, as always. Definitely let me know if my audio and video sounds good. An early welcome here to Henry V, Henry Vi. We got Bengal, Matthew. Matthew said happy Friday. Neil Thompson is in. Amadeel. Garujo, Grand External, Nix. Hello, everybody. If you're already online, definitely say hi. Let me know how I sound. And I'll just kind of hang out with you guys for a few minutes before diving into the wins. This week, we had a pretty big one here. We also have M, I see here on the Signal group. He has sat down for the stream, so that should be fun. We got Kinky Koala, good evening or day. Sounds good. Henry's live. Yes. Hello, everybody. And yeah, I just finished lunch and I'm now here and I have some water next to me and I just chugged my matcha. That's all that's been going on over here. Typical format today, nothing too crazy. I'm gonna go through the wins. The highlight is Grumpy Pig Bear, who had a ton of updates and I just felt like it was worth showcasing that. There's a little sneak preview, but we have a lot of really interesting wins this week that I think had a lot of cool lessons and people just made a lot of big progress on different things. So, just good stuff all around this week. So I'm really excited to kind of walk you guys through these wins. And let's see, typical format. So like you guys can all leave questions. You guys can leave your wins in the live chat and I'll be cycling in and out of the wins on the forum as well as engaging with all of you in the live chat. And if you're in the Signal group, because you're a Techlorian, I'll also be following that as well. And then says hi, and they said that audio and video sound great. So thank you. Cool. I'm just gonna give everyone a few more minutes before I start. Let's see here. Let's look at these. Grand External, Frye. Henry's live, new hair look. It's not so much a new hair look, and it's more of just it's growing out. Like, I haven't really done anything with it. So, first time watching on YouTube. Nice. A quick update on that. So, if you haven't already, there's a brand new PeerTube instance. It's live now, ready to go. Everything's synced up. Last week, I said it was, I think, pretty much ready. But now it is officially ready. And I have a video that's going to come out probably in the next few hours, and you'll see it there as well. So check it out, techlore.tv. Get subscribed. You can follow via RSS. It's on the Fediverse, so technically you can follow it from Mastodon or anywhere else that uses ActivityPub. Or you can just subscribe directly if you have a PeerTube account or NewPipe or something like that. So you'll see the different ways to subscribe here. That's a cool little announcement. I'm super excited about this. It's a new permanent home for like Techlore content on the Fediverse. We've always kind of used random PeerTube instances in the past, and that's kind of nice to have a more permanent place now. So, yeah. With that said, I'm gonna go ahead and get started here. So we're gonna start with Grumpy Pig Bear. And again, this is a huge win, just to kind of give credit where it's due before I even start here. So they started setting up Brave Browser on Android and Windows, and they're running Oblivious DOH DNS, which I assume is going to give you some cool privacy benefits. I haven't actually used Oblivious DOH, and I'm not super familiar with it, but it sounds like it's a part of a much bigger like configuration that you're trying to go with. So you're using Yoga DNS on Windows, you're using Rethink DNS on Android, you're using your Pi-hole with also NextDNS, and you're also using Hegesy Pro block lists. And the cool thing about this is it sounds like you've perfectly configured all your devices to have DNS filtering when and when you don't want it. And what that allows you to do is block trackers on websites, block some ads even, and even block telemetry. So like using these tools, what you'll see is you can actually block certain domains contacted by the Windows operating system, Microsoft or Apple, Mac OS, or even iOS or your smart TVs. If all of your devices are being tunneled through some of these DNS filtering tools, you can actually really like do a lot of damage against these companies. So it's pretty cool stuff, and that's already a huge win right there. They started using Entei Auth, which is super cool. Image photos, they are doing a self-hosted one on Oracle Cloud's free tier, which I haven't heard of, and they said it's permanently free, which makes me raise an eyebrow. Don't know how true or what the limitations are there, but if it works for you, that sounds pretty cool. And if you haven't heard of Image Photos, it's like a self-hosted Google Photos provider. You can self-host Entei as well. I don't know what the exact differences are between a self-hosted Entei versus an Image, because I haven't used Image myself. But either way, you're taking some ownership here, and that's pretty cool. They're using Tailscale as well to be able to access things, I assume outside the home, which is also something that I do, which is very nice. It's like the only realistic way I would actually be able to use my NAS. Let's see here. They're using NotesNook. They're using Fudo keyboard, which I've heard great things about on the Android side of things for any of you looking for a keyboard. They've moved away from Google Contacts to Nextcloud, and they're syncing it via DavX5. Which is like the open source way to sync on Android devices to your other devices. They're using C file with only Office. Only Office, I believe their desktop clients are open source. And it's, in my opinion, a much more polished version of like LibreOffice. So really cool stuff. Duck.ai, which is their private AI. They're using DuckDuckGo, Brave Search, and Start Page. They're using OpenPGP, and they're trying to do that with a YubiKey to encrypt files and emails with their YubiKey, which is crazy. They're compartmentalizing things, and they're also setting up CryptoMator. So, you know, we can dive into these extensively, and that could be a whole live stream, but I just wanted to massively shout out Grumpy Pig Bear, and maybe we can get some confetti in the live chat too, because there's just so many wins. I feel like I couldn't feature this one, or I couldn't not feature this one. M says, Yoga DNS is such a fun name on Signal. Stretching and bending those DNS requests is, yeah, pretty true. I think this is a pretty complex DNS configuration. You don't all have to have something like this. Like if you just use NextDNS, you just set up one NextDNS profile or even a second one, and then you set that up on each device as needed. So it doesn't have to be this complicated, but I'm sure there's a good reason that they picked all these different tools on different systems. Let me go ahead and check in on the live chat here. Damn, I thought my 6 wins is impressive. Wow, yeah, you gotta get those numbers up, man. That's what Grumpy Pig Bear is telling all of you. You guys are not getting enough wins. Obviously joking. Any win's a good win, but 14 is pretty impressive. Is Yoga DNS an alternative to NextDNS? So here, let me pull up the site so I can kind of show you guys. It's easier to show you. So, and I hope this doesn't turn you away because their website is kind of, it doesn't inspire the same feelings that Yoga inspires in me. Let's put it that way. But it's just a way to better manage DNS providers on Windows. So it's a DNS client. It's not really meant to replace NextDNS necessarily, but you could use this in conjunction with NextDNS. So there are some pretty cool features here. I haven't personally used Yoga DNS, but I've seen some cool people you do some cool things with Yoga DNS. So I think you'll know if you need to use it because it's got some pretty sophisticated features. There I am. Let's see. NextDNS has proven annoying with the free caps on traffic each month. I guess it depends if you hit it. I've never actually hit the free cap personally. But yeah, if you do more than the free cap, you got to pay for it if you want the benefits. I guess that's the limitation. I feel like if you're using that much traffic, then you're supporting a good service. Let's see here. M said, yeah, it doesn't make Zen for the Yoga DNS website. I'm trying to keep it nice. So Per Privacy says, this week, my wins are I finally moved all my cloud data away from Microsoft 365 services. Congrats. I know that can be hard to do, though I feel like most people don't regret it. Like, I've never heard anyone say they love the Microsoft 365 ecosystem before. Maybe you know someone, but I don't. They moved all their cloud data out of Google and started the process of getting rid of Google services. Good luck on that journey. I know you said start, so I don't expect you to be done for the next privacy wins next week. But if you do, I'll be very impressed, but definitely keep us updated on the progress each week. They continued their journey into the abyss of the account declutter. Yeah, that can take a long time. So good luck with that as well. That's another thing that might take a long time. And then they got into a groove with 2FA, and it's not directly linked to privacy and security, but they gave a speech about enshittification in front of a large audience, which sounds really cool. So if you're a student, if you are in the professional world and you ever have an opportunity to talk about privacy and security topics or even sneak it into something else, it's something I've done a lot in my past and it seems to overall be pretty well received. So highly recommend experimenting with that, and it sounds like that might be what they did without sharing too much information on their end. Tallulah. The increase in fingerprinting information, I created some scripts that will automatically shut down MoleVet each night and reopen in the morning. I'm working now on trying to duplicate these in my Linux machine. I'm still unsure whether regularly visiting the same sequence of websites is something fingerprintable. I've set up a system for a phone backup to my NAS, and a friend of mine also got a NAS and has emptied their Google account. So it's going to really depend without seeing your exact workflow. It's going to be pretty hard for you to accurately know how effective changing out your IP address that frequently is going to be. I would think that frequently changing your IP address altogether would be more impactful than turning it off and on, if that makes sense. I'm actually putting out, it's done, it's on YouTube. I just need to put the title and thumbnail together and polish things up. But I just did a fingerprinting masterclass video. It's up on YouTube, it's unlisted, and I'll publish it definitely today. And it's 38 minutes, I think. So it's extremely thorough and it does talk on VPNs and IP address, tracking. And so hopefully that gives you some ideas and things to play with. Otherwise it'd be cool to kind of see your reasoning behind why you think this would be impactful for you. And then they said they have a system for a phone backup to my NAS, which is also exciting. And just having a NAS honestly is a really easy way to kind of centralize your data safely. So congrats. And really cool wins. Let's see here. Over on the Signal group, great wins, great username, and great energy. I believe they're referring to Per Privacy, which I agree. It's a fun username. Let's see. Gurujo said, I really wanted to try and get an event on my uni about privacy and security, and I wanted guests like you and Naomi, but seeing how to execute it just starts to sound complicated. Yeah, you don't have to go out of your way to start an event, but if you're ever in a position where an event's happening anyway and you can sneak it in or it can be the main focus of the talk, then I think that's where it's a little easier to do. Ale has some wins. They got a new pixel and installed Graphene on it. They got browser compartmentalization for different internet activities, and it's now in action. They're using Brave, Firefox, LibreWolf, and MoleVet browser, all for different things with the settings they want for ephemeral and semi-ephemeral setups. So great stuff. I'm a huge proponent of multiple browsers for different things. Sounds like you're kind of experimenting with which ones to keep for different reasons and which ones to keep ephemeral and non-ephemeral. And if you haven't done this yet and you're only using one browser still, unless you have a good reason for it, of course, I really recommend a lot of people experiment with multiple browsers because you will probably find one or two things that each browser does that's better than what you're doing. And speaking of this, I have a little announcement here. I've been playing a lot more with Zen Browser recently. So I know this is huge. I haven't played with a new browser in a long time. Pretty much my goal is to use Zen Browser because I was having a couple issues. One, I have to check so many websites all day. There's multiple Twitter accounts, there's multiple Mastodon accounts, there's multiple social media accounts I have to publish to. There's multiple, what else is there? Multiple forums I have to keep up with. There's so many different services I have to keep up with on a daily basis, and I got really tired of having to cycle between Brave profiles, and I wanted something that what I envisioned in my head is I open a program and there's a chart of everything I have to check in my daily routine, and I just click one by one, and on top of that, it somehow also is able to separate per web app, essentially. I don't want to have to use the account switchers in each dedicated service. Well, after stumbling a little bit more on Zen and trying it out, it kind of does that perfectly. You can use the Essentials tab in Zen to pretty much have everything built in, and you can set up links that are predetermined that already go to a specific Firefox container, and that's essentially what I did, is I set up Firefox containers for each account I have to check, so now that pretty much automated that whole system, and I removed all of my Brave profiles as part of that journey. So kind of a personal win. I didn't put it in the wins, and it's kind of an extension of Ale's win here of try out different browsers, see what works for you, and also try new things. And so, yeah, I'm actually using Zen as part of my workflow now to help simplify the way I check different accounts day to day. Next step is fully moving to Fedora Linux for their desktop computing needs to finally become free of all big tech they use from a hardware and security point of view. Super exciting stuff. definitely keep us updated on the Fedora transition. And I hope it's smooth and easy and you get to report back that it was all effortless. Let me go ahead and check in on the live chat here. Let's see. We are in the final phase of deleting G Suite next week and moving to Proton. The struggle is real. Yeah, good luck, Grand External. The final phase can also be the hardest phase. And yeah, just keep it up. That's all I can really say to you, and keep us updated on the journey. And hopefully there aren't like lingering things that you forget about. Like, I hope that it's just a smooth transition from here. What do you think about the DNS provided with Mulvad VPN and Proton VPN? Are those DNS good enough? Yeah, I like both. So right now I've been playing around with just using Mulvad's regular DNS provider, kind of. Not the default one they use when you connect to a VPN, but I'm using their like filtering. They have a chart on their website with custom DNS providers, or with their, here, let me pull it up so you guys can see this. So it's their like DOH servers. So if you go to their website, they have different content blockers, and you can select the one that you want to use. So I've been using just the all one, all.dns.mulvad.net, and it's been pretty effective for me lately. I still find myself missing NextDNS quite a bit because I liked the like flexibility of NextDNS, and I was using it for a lot more things than just content filtering. This is faster because you get to kind of keep it all within Mulvad's servers and their DNS. And I have been overall enjoying it. And it's kind of the best way to do it if you're using Tailscale with Mulvad, because then there isn't like a native way to do this, I don't think, because there's no like, I think with Mulvad's client, you can select which filters you want natively in the app, but I don't think you can do that with Tailscale. So you have to set up these like custom filters. But these are really good. I highly recommend them. If you're using any other VPN provider and you're not happy with them, or you're not using a VPN at all, I do think there's still a lot of benefit in using their filtering lists. So yeah, I'm overall like pretty pro the Mulvad lists. Let's see. Loonduke Journal, I'm not super familiar with it, so don't have many thoughts there, sadly. Rodrigo, thank you for supporting us. Let's see here. Can I not? I can't like, I thought you can like these, what happened? Anyway, thank you, Rodrigo. Thank you for the support. And if you have any questions or follow-ups or anything for me to answer or address, please leave it. Especially if you leave a super chat, I like to prioritize those. So thank you for the support, and you said hey here, definitely feel free to follow up with anything else. And then I wanted to try something as well, let me see. Oh, I can do polls apparently. How do people gift? How do you gift memberships to people? I've seen someone do that before, and I don't even know how to do that. I can set goals. Whoa, cool. Okay, I should play around more with this another time, not when I'm in the middle of a live stream. The Craftsman says, I'm new to your channel. Is it good privacy practice to have a VoIP service for talk and chat and use a SIM or eSIM for data only? My goal is to lessen the tracking of my location and other things. Yeah. In terms of lessening the tracking of your location, whether or not your cell plan is data only or like it's used for text and voice won't really change much for you. I think more so the benefits of using a VoIP provider, in my view, one, you can compartmentalize things a little bit better. So you can have different numbers for different things, which is typically more expensive and can be more inconvenient if you do it with only SIMs. Because then you're capped out by like, I think it's 8 phone numbers on iOS, and an Android is going to vary drastically by what service you're using. It's also easier to be more cross-compatible. So if you have an Android phone and an iPhone phone in your iPhone phone in your workflow, you can use a VoIP service, and it essentially allows you to use it on multiple devices. So that's a huge win as well. And also the big thing too, if you have a higher threat model, not having to use SMS or something on your native operating system does shut down a lot of attacks that can be done that take advantage of those kind of attack vectors. So it reduces attack surface a little bit, but that's more of an advanced threat model thing. I think for most people, just having a VoIP service makes it easier for you to compartmentalize things. It's also nice to have a separate app for it, and those are normally more disposable and cheaper than having to get a dedicated cell plan. So those are typically my thoughts on it. I think that trying to deal with location tracking with strictly that isn't going to lead you too far, but it's definitely a consideration and something to think about when you're exploring phone workflows. Let's see. Actually, it's a good point as well, what Nick said here. Also, if you lose your phone or your eSIM, it's a really good benefit. Let's see. Signal Group. GoToWeJo has some interesting stuff here. About a conference. Cool. Let's see. My concern is that if it is significant improvement, would I have separated DNS or not? Got it. Hi, could I get your opinion on Open Keychain? I don't have too many opinions on Open Keychain, unfortunately. So yeah, don't have too much to share there. Yeah. Yep. Okay, thank you for your help, of course. You can separate them if you want, but I don't think you get additional privacy gain. Thank you. Yep, all right, I'm all caught up. I'll get back to the NordPass one after I move through a few more wins. We already did Grumpy Pig Bear. We got Cutie here, who says, biggest win this week. I think they're trying to be competitive, and they're saying they're the biggest win of everybody for the week. So, come on. You guys got to step up. But I don't know. 14 wins is a big deal. I successfully installed Linux Mint on my laptop and set up dual boot with Windows. I'm planning to dive into customization and further tinkering soon. Congrats. And also, like, just be careful with dual boots, you know, make sure you keep things separate, watch out for updates. They uninstalled OneDrive from their laptop. They, instead of using biometric to unlock set pin on Dashlane app on their phone, instead of using biometric to unlock set pin, I don't know what the second one is saying, unfortunately. So if you could expand on that, it would really help. Oh, it sounds like you've moved to Dashlane app on your phone because you mentioned it down here. They removed old access to WhatsApp and Discord. They're using Eraser and Revo uninstaller for deleting files and apps. They're using ShareX. They installed a QR code scanner from F-Droid. The default one didn't work. They've installed, they've been focused on privacy for the last 2 years, and here's what their current setup looks like. They're using Zen Browser, Brave, and Fennec, which is a pretty cool workflow. And then they have security tools like their password manager, which they're using Dashlane, and they're considering Bitwarden or Proton Pass after their current subscription ends. Yeah, I think those are two really good alternatives. If you're on Dashlane already and it's working well for you, I think it's always good to move to these open source providers, but Dashlane isn't the worst place to be, and so it's not like P1. But just so you know, it's I think fairly easy to like import into these as well. And they both have free plans. So I think that could actually be a really easy switch if you wanted to do that. They're using NTAuth for 2FA and they're using Proton VPN as well as an antivirus. They're not planning to renew it, but they've realized secure habits matter than relying solely on antivirus software. So it looks like they're not going to renew that. And I would overall agree with that for most people. They're using Windows, Debloated by Chris Titus Tech, Windows Utility, and they're using a debloated Android phone with Kanta via Shizuku, which I haven't heard of before, so I can't really comment on how effective that is. They're using F-Droid and Aurora, they're using Kanta for installing unwanted apps, and they're watching YouTube via Brave or NewPipe. Honestly, like watching like YouTube videos via Brave is super underrated, especially on mobile. And then cloud and productivity, they're using Brave Search, they're using Proton Mail, as well as DuckDuckGo email protection. They're using Notion for their notes, and they're currently testing NotesNook, LunaTask, and AnyType, which, yeah, I think are kind of like the three main things to take a look at if you are trying to find an end-to-end encrypted notes plus more kind of suite. And they all have kind of different focuses, so definitely try all three and see what works best for you. They have Mega for photos and file storage for their backup, and they're using Fudo keyboards. So this is another huge win this week. Huge congrats to Cutie, and it sounds like they're still progressing on the journey here and trying to figure things out, and they have some lingering services like Norton and Dashlane that they're still kind of playing around with, so pretty cool stuff. Let's see. They kind of expanded here on dual booting. sent Discord an email, this is from Wellington, trying to get all my data removed since their version of delete account is just changing your name. Absurd, honestly. That most definitely violates GDPR. Also convinced some family members to use Brave instead of Chrome. That's a big one. I really like encouraging people to explore that. If people are using Chrome and they don't want to move from Chrome, I like to install uBlock Origin Lite is now what it is because they got rid of Manifest V2. And if you're able to have more luck, then moving people to Brave, I think, is even better. So huge win. And I hope it's not too hard to convince people to move to Brave from Chrome because it's low-key kind of better at a lot of things. Yeah, M helped me understand that they're using a PIN instead of biometrics to unlock the app. Oh, for Dashlane, I see what you're saying now. So for Dashlane, they're using PIN instead of biometrics to unlock Dashlane on their phone. Yeah, I mean, if that's helpful to you, then that could be good. Personally, for me, what I really like to do is I like to just have two different login methods for a password manager between what you need to get into the phone versus what you need to get into your password manager. So I don't care too much what the configuration is. You can use a passphrase to get into your phone and then a new dedicated password to get into your password manager. You can use biometrics to get into your phone, but then not use them for the password manager. The point is, I would really recommend to use two different things because theoretically, if someone like gets your password or the way to get into your phone, however they do that, then they need a different way to get into your password manager, if that makes sense. So I like to just have two different things. Let's see here. Let me check in on the live chat. Henry, did you do a video on NordPass trying to figure out a password manager? I haven't, and I'm kind of mixed on this, so if you guys have feedback, please let me know. Reviews take a lot of time to do right. There's a lot of reviews on the internet and on YouTube that, not just in the privacy and security world, I think it's actually quite a bit better in our like field, industry, whatever you want to call it. But just generally speaking, like if you go and watch a lot of NordPass reviews, I'd say maybe like half of them aren't actually reviews. They're like, oh, NordPass is great. It protects you. It keeps you safe. It uses military-grade encryption. And here's how it works and here's how it looks. So it'll give you a good breakdown and overview of what the service does, but it's not an actual like critical, like, oh, I used it for 3 weeks. Here's what I liked. And here are all my thoughts actually using it. And here's what I didn't like. And I feel like doing an actual proper review of a service is really hard because you actually have to use the service for a long time and give like good feedback that's applicable to a lot of people. So my feedback that I'm asking for from all of you is I have limited time and I figure it's better to review services that I'd unironically recommend when I'm done reviewing it. Whereas NordPass probably wouldn't be one of those services because it's not open source and there has really no benefits over something like ProtonPass or Bitwarden right now, or even 1Password. And so it's just a really hard service for me to recommend, and it's associated with obviously Nord, the VPN company, which makes, you know, it's not like they have the worst reputation in the world, but I definitely think people are quicker to trust Bitwarden and ProtonPass. So the feedback I'm looking for is it worth, like, would you guys want me to cover more of these popular services, and is me giving critical feedback still useful? Or do you want me to just review and kind of do coverage and still be critical, but for services that are new and that are probably things that you guys actually want to use? I don't have like unlimited time, so I have to kind of choose what I review wisely. So yeah, definitely open to feedback, and I hope I made sense. That was really rambly, but yeah. Let's see here. They've nuked 2 Windows boots from Linux. From Linux mishaps. Dual booting can be messy, so just be aware of that. Keep frequent backups, especially if you dual boot. Let's see. Do you recommend proxy chains to protect my IP address devices? I'm not super familiar with proxy chains, but from what I've heard, if you have to use them for whatever reason, they're not like inherently an evil or bad tool. So if you have a use case for it, I'd say go for it. But again, it's not something I'm super familiar with, and I don't have too much firsthand experience with it to give you like a list of pros and cons. Exam R, good to see Monero is being valued as the top privacy currency by the market. Yeah, and it has for a while. I mean, if it's not from the market, then like just the amount of usability is what really matters to me for Monero. So it's good stuff. And actually, that reminds me, we do have XMR chat. I don't know if anyone left a comment here on our XMR chat, but you can actually like leave questions and wins and whatnot via XMR chat. And let me see if anyone left anything. Okay, we actually did get one. Okay, let me go ahead and cover those. I'm really glad that I checked in on this. So we have a few new ones. So Anon said all roads lead to Monero. Shaquille Oatmeal said, what I recently did since getting back into privacy and cybersecurity, they installed Fedora on my main laptop, installed CubesOS on my PC, switched to StartPage, a search engine, and are using YubiKeys and Entayath, and most importantly, subscribe to TechLore back again. That last one is my favorite win of all of those, but unironically, this is all really good stuff, and it's kind of interesting you're using Fedora on one laptop and CubesOS on a different one. So yeah, I think that's a really interesting workflow. I haven't seen that too often, but I'm sure it's nice to have a more usable operating system for certain things, and when you need like better hardware access and better performance. So I would be curious to hear why you use Fedora for some things and CubesOS for some other things. And yeah, just overall good stuff there from Shaquille Oatmeal, and thank you for sending some Monero, and I really appreciate it. And then Wanna Make You See Uwu says, imagine you're living in a country that's restrictive towards privacy. VPNs are being blocked heavily, access to the majority of privacy tools are blocked, and could get in trouble for using certain tools. What would you do without leaving? Yeah, so, I mean, it's good you expanded on that, because I would unironically say if you have the means to, again, this is very, very difficult. Not everyone's in this situation, but if you have the means, obviously trying to get somewhere where it's not a problem is ideal. But if, you know, that can't happen, you're stuck where you are. Tools like Tor are definitely great, and they have things like Tor bridges, which actually obfuscate your traffic to look like regular web traffic. So you have obfuscation of the fact that you're using a privacy tool. And your threat model is going to change pretty dramatically if this is you. You're going to have to rely more on services that have more of this obfuscation, because you can't just blatantly be using these privacy services in a way that's obvious that could potentially be linked to you. So if it were me, again, this is like, I read this for the first time now, so it's not like an ultra thorough answer that I'm going to be able to give you. But I might be quicker to embrace more public tools, like WhatsApp, trying to like pretty much have like a regular life on regular tools that I don't use for sensitive things still. But it's good to establish some level of normalcy so you can say, no, these are the tools I use. I've never used the other tool. And you can establish that, like the fact that you might not be doing other things. Obviously, I think Tor browser is a super valuable tool here, and using it system-wide might be more impactful in situations like this. So you might have to be using Orbot system-wide on your mobile devices or on your computer. You could try to route Tor like system-wide using things like Hunix. I think Hunix is like super powerful for a situation like this. Or you can even have a dedicated device that only routes through Tor, or you can use TailsOS. And also when you use things like Proton or use things like Signal, you're probably going to be using their censorship resistance tools that are built into those services in the settings. So you really have to think outside the box in situations like this. Most things you can get around, but you just have to be a little more careful with it. And there's different considerations than other countries. And I think this whole question speaks to how like there's just so many different potential like allies and enemies that you can have in your privacy and security journey, just depending on where you live or just depending on what your situation is. If you're in Russia and you're an activist, then you might actually have a lot of luck being in the Google ecosystem, because Google is not going to hand over your information to Russian intelligence. But if you are like in the US and you're an activist in the US and you think that, you know, the US government might target you, then you probably shouldn't be storing your data with Google, especially because it doesn't have zero knowledge encryption and all this stuff. So just kind of good to think about the broader implications of the services you use and why you do the things you do in your privacy journey. I hope that helped like answer some questions there. And then let me catch up here. I agree with your stance. This is regarding the feedback I was looking for and like what services should I review, and should I review everything even if like I know it's not going to be a service I recommend. M said, I'm a fan of the cover the new projects will probably use strategy. Okay, cool. So that's one data point. I'd love to hear other people as well. Let's see. That's some big wins this week. Congrats to everyone. Let's see. Loonduke, the guy's obsessed with one subject and reports like a problem. I do watch his few videos. I don't even know what this is, so I have nothing to report. Fudo's great. Thanks, Jose. I've heard only great things about Fudo from people. So Fudo's keyboard since the day it came out revolutionized how I use my keyboard. I like the idea of everyone sharing their current configs the way Qt did. Helpful. Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's not just helpful for the privacy wins to give people context, but it's helpful for people new to kind of see what other people do, and it shares ideas. It's pretty much like what I do for a lot of my content, where I share things I do, and hopefully it gives you guys ideas, but you guys have different ideas that work for different people, so it's helpful if you do that as well. Alfredo, how can we make Linux more mainstream? I mean, so that more and more people make the switch to Linux and it becomes easier and more efficient. Yeah, I think, technology needs to get better. Linux needs to have features and software availability that's on par with other operating systems. It needs to get easier to install. Education that we do needs to get better so that people know about Linux and people need, they can do a better job using it and they can do a safer job moving over to it and migrating and knowing what it looks like. Pretty much like there's ways to improve Linux migration in every part of the stack, from the desktop environments to hardware compatibility to what hardware is even, being sold with Linux pre-installed in the first place to operating systems and what they're prioritizing, and just how we talk about Linux even. Like there's just multiple steps along the way that we can improve on, I think. So I think overall the Linux community is doing a good job of evolving where it can. Change is slow, and I think overall things are moving in a mostly positive direction. Personally, I've expanded on this last week. My biggest gripe right now is like hardware on Linux and trying to get Linux and devices and hardware compatibility more into the ARM realm of things, to be more compatible with where every other computer in the world is migrating, which is like ARM devices are definitely the future. So I think that's kind of the way to go. Linux is really betting on risk in a lot of ways, I think. And there's benefits there, but I don't think for end users as much, from what I can tell. I'm considering buying my first UTF device. So I'm considering YubiKey, Thetis, Titan by Google, and NitroKey. Any more brands I should be aware of? Devices are a Linux laptop, a Calyx phone, an iPhone. Yeah, so I personally use YubiKeys. I like YubiKeys, they work really well, and they have some pretty cool, nifty features. There's also only keys, there's solo keys if you want something open source, and also NitroKey, which you mentioned. Those are kind of like the three open source options. Frankly, if you're going to go with a proprietary option anyway, I don't know why you wouldn't just get YubiKeys. They're kind of the best. But if you want an open source option, then just check out the other three and see which one connects best with you. That's kind of what I would point people to. But honestly, they all kind of do the same thing and they're really bare bones devices. So it's you're not going to like make a bad decision. Just make sure it's compatible with your devices. They like Fudo, but its swipe typing isn't the greatest. Let's see, is there Fudo for iOS? I don't believe so. If someone could confirm that, that would be nice. When are the interviews you've done recently coming out? So I have a wall, and hopefully I'll have one up by tomorrow through Monday. So in the next few days, we'll see the first one come out. I think I sent an XMR chat last week, but you didn't read it. Okay, I did read it now. And I actually read it before I read your comment. So I'm pretty happy about that. Let's see. But I straight up missed it last week. Okay, I shouldn't be happy about that. Fudo's a keyboard app for Android, I believe. I don't know for iOS. Let's see. You would get more traffic if you did reviews on popular privacy and security tools. Those people would be the kinds of people you want to reach out to. Just an idea. Yeah, it kind of depends on the like what I'm prioritizing, I suppose. So, I do think that they do have more mainstream appeal. So yeah, I'll think about it more. Let's see. What's a duress password? Yeah, so typically I don't know exactly how they implement this, but normally it's a fake password that will like wipe your phone, for example, or it's a fake password that'll direct you to what looks like your operating system. So you'll say, "Oh yeah, sure, I'll give you my password," and it sends you to like, some different user profile that just has like these BS apps on installed, but it hides your regular user profile, if that makes sense. So it's just a subtle way to be able to have plausible deniability, essentially. Is Google search with Smurf Gmail? I don't know. I've never heard of Smurf Gmail. Yeah, so I touched on this last week. Since you're now on PeerTube, any plans to live stream on PeerTube too? Yeah, so why this is kind of hard right now is a bit technical. So live streaming technology is done through RMTP, which is a specific protocol, and typically that's fine. The problem is that things like Cloudflare, which is necessary to run like a PeerTube server or anything like Cloudflare, you need some kind of protection when you have this, or else people can just abuse the hell out of it. Like a lot of these don't do RMTP streaming on their free plans. And so what this looks like is I actually did set up a live stream. I posted on it on socials. I was able to get it to work. And my goal was to do live streaming, but I couldn't actually set up live streaming in a way where it was still protected by something like Cloudflare. And so I'm still looking for advice if anyone has anything that would allow me to essentially have a protected live stream or a way to separate the live stream. And so I have thought about using an external service, maybe like self-hosting something else that I'm fine if it gets DDoSed while I'm live streaming or something happens, it's whatever. But I was exploring using a subdomain, so using something like live.techlore.tv. And essentially not tunneling that subdomain through Cloudflare. So if anything happens, it's just restricted to that subdomain, and then the main domain is still behind Cloudflare. But PeerTube doesn't actually let you do that. And there's an open GitHub issue for it, and I responded to it to kind of bump it up. So that's kind of where I'm at. So again, just to kind of recap that, I've been experimenting with it. I was able to do it. However, it's hard to do it publicly at the moment, safely, if that makes sense. Let's see. Keep the channel simple. Cool. Yeah, I appreciate the feedback. Cool. All right, let me go back to the wins. So we got Arkstone and they have a status. That's a new thing on the forum, by the way, if you're using the forum. They're getting better, so I'm glad to hear that. The weekly privacy updates, they're minimizing their digital life. They deleted all accounts they can't live without, like in the pre-internet era. They switched completely to Linux. They bought a Windows laptop only to play Steam games, so switching to Linux is the last major thing left in digital privacy. And they're starting to engage with DPOs of various institutions in their country to get their privacy laws better and request to share my information to me and delete those that are not required. If they don't comply, I am ready to go the legal way to deal with them. And they're excited to share more about themselves and their journey in the next privacy wins. And I'm excited to hear about it because you already had a killer start. So congrats. Let's see here. Let's see. I'm gonna check in on Signal. Speaking of, how's the iPhone 13 mini? I'm considering getting one before the compact smartphones completely end just to try it on iOS. Yeah, so I have a few phones laying around and I still have a mini, and actually the Signal Group is on the mini right in front of me. I love the form factor of the iPhone mini. I wish Android devices supported it. I wish Android devices that supported custom ROMs were like it. And I'm so upset that the iPhone SE, I didn't really think it would happen. I was just hopeful it would happen, but I wish that the iPhone SE would be still a compact device because it always has been the smaller, more compact device, just historically. And they've completely killed it. And so there are no more small phones from any major companies anymore on either iOS or the Android side of things. So I'm actually really upset about it. But the Mini is great. And especially for someone like me, I don't really use phones that much at this point. And most of my screen time is on a laptop at this point. So I don't really care about the battery life concerns. But yeah, my plan is like once the battery life is shot on the Mini, I'm gonna get it replaced. I'm not gonna buy a new phone, and I don't know even what my next phone would look like because I hate big phones. And so I'm really desperate and hoping that someone releases a smaller phone that meets some of my other needs. Like I want it to come from ideally something that I can remove any telemetry for, ideally something that doesn't come with sketchy domains that pings like Chinese servers. It receives long-term software updates, so I can have it for a long time because there were some phones that were smaller and didn't have bloatware and weren't too bad, but they only had 2 to 3 years of security updates, which is just a waste of money to me at that point because I keep my phones for a long time. So it's unfolding, and I'm just a little upset about it. And yeah, Grand External says you still have a few years on the Mini. And yeah, like that's kind of what I'm hoping for that device. Like it still has a few years left, and there's still time. I'm buying time essentially to hopefully until something better comes out. I keep thinking that they've hit the limit. They can't make devices bigger, and I just keep being wrong. Like, the devices somehow keep getting bigger. And as someone who's, like, on the go a lot, and I go for runs, I go for bike rides, I go to the gym, I just don't even know how people do it. I feel like you have to have a purse or a backpack everywhere you go just to, like, carry your phone with you. And I feel like that doesn't make any sense to me. So, I don't know. As someone who's more active, I can't even, like, navigate these big phones and what to do with them. And, yeah, the Pixel 5 is a pretty good size. I would argue the Pixel 4a was even better because I think that was smaller than the 5. Let's see. Taserface. Their Fedora workstation journey continues. They've had several problems. Proton VPN doesn't have a Linux app and had... One second. Ooh. Proton VPN doesn't have a Linux app and had to be installed via CLI, which wasn't much of a problem, but the thing had to be started manually. I solved this by installing an app in GNOME Tweaks, which forces any app the user selects to start at boot. Cool, I'm glad you're able to fix that, but it's really frustrating that Proton doesn't just do better, because all other Linux, the whole like Proton Linux situation as a whole just isn't great. So kind of embarrassing, and I wish that they got that together. In case Proton's kill switch fails, I found KubitTorrent to the VPN, or they bound KubitTorrent to the VPN, sorry. And then for notes, they switched to Joplin, very nice on a laptop, so on Android. For now, they're exporting notes and copying them to their phone, either using a thumb drive or Proton drive. Pretty cool stuff. No Linux app for Proton drive. Again, that's the theme of this win. But they did discover that they have drive open in the browser and files open, they can drag and drop files into the drive. Who needs an app? Not me. That's pretty cool, but if you need like ongoing real-time syncing, then the app is actually really nice. Like one place that I really can't use web apps for is like cloud services that I need active syncing for, especially with like video files, which are massive. So yeah, if you don't need it, then you don't need it. But that's why you said not you. No more Chromium browsers for me except Vanadium. They're using Firefox, Silver login sites, and LibreWolf is their forgetful browser. Very nice. Fedora can't play AC3 sound, so they gave up on fixing this after a few days. Every site and forum I visited posts the same canned line of code, which doesn't work. That seems obnoxious, and there's no workaround for that. That seems pretty crazy, actually. FreeTube is what they're using for YouTube. Pretty cool, and their data's having issues with Stock 6a, and they used the Chromebook to flash Graphene. Being signed into his Graphene or his Google account, he didn't gain on his privacy. He doesn't care, though, but I'm learning about problems when Graphene OS and Google interact, so knowledge is a win. And edit, they got Sync Thing on Linux and Sync Thing Fork on Android working together. Happy, happy, joy, joy. Lots of good stuff all around, so congrats, Taserface. Sounds like you're figuring it out, and good job with the troubleshooting. It sounds like you had mostly wins with the troubleshooting. Go Better is a patron, so thank you for supporting TechLore and being a TechLorean. My wins this week, they're doing tons of tinkering, schminkering on Linux. Super educational, but it never ends. One thing learned, three more need to be. So they've slowed down a bit. They super duper want to use Gentoo, but learning it takes too much time, maybe later. Yeah, that checks out. They watched the past week's stream and did a research. So Brave Search has this thing called Goggles, so they configured the search bar to use one that removes Reddit posts from results. Once again, with respect to Redditors, so I'm back on Brave Search. Cool, I don't remember who gave that advice or if it was me. If it was me, that's really cool. But yes, you can like customize things with Brave Search. So I don't know who suggested that, but either way, it sounds like it worked perfectly for you. They switched from Mulvad from their previous VPN and started doing suspicious stuff. I don't have less anymore, but at least I'm more comfortable. I don't know what that is. But cool stuff, Go Better. It sounds like you're figuring it out, and it's also cool on my end to see like the progress you guys make each week. So I like the consistency, and I appreciate you all like leaving your wins each week because it's cool to see the patterns. Let's see. Win from Tommy, who's a new Bronze TechLorean. Also, they've been active in their community for a long time, actually, and I've worked with Tommy, and it's been pretty cool. But they have a win. They left Google Workspace and moved over to Proton's suite, switched to a privacy-focused password manager, and now they're going to get brave and ditch Google Chrome. Baby steps, but they'll get there. So good job, Tommy. Definitely, I mean, those aren't baby steps. Like, those are pretty big things, so I wanted to just send a congrats there. Let's see, Rolls Ice Cream, they've made baby steps into local AI. They installed Alpaca, which is a GUI local AI client for Linux. And if they install Llama 3.2 with 1 billion parameters, for now, the 1B parameters, I don't know if it's a billion. I think it's billion though, right? Someone let me know. For now, the experience is great. I don't know if I will continue using local AI instead of something like Duck AI, but it's fantastic nonetheless. If anyone has lightweight models, 1B to 3B parameters that are interesting to check out, let me know. Currently testing DeepSeek R1 with 1.5B parameters. Cool stuff. Local AI is pretty nice. Yeah, it's pretty nice. So if it's like the way you're going to use AI, it's definitely the most like privacy respecting way to do so. And you can still get some benefit from it too if there's a place for it in your workflow. Let's see. Let me check in on the live chat before I finish up the forum wins. I think it's funny you'll go without a phone until someone makes a small phone. Yeah, I mean, not, I won't go without a phone. I'm gonna have to eventually figure it out. But yeah, I'm pretty pissed about the phone situation. I'm not gonna lie. Like it's, and this has been a pattern. So this is gonna turn into a rant. Just warning you. I'm getting really angry that, like, genuinely angry because I have such basic needs overall for my tech, and they just can't be met. Like they're only catering to more and more premium things that when I look at it, I go, nobody needs that. And so you're seeing this with Apple, you're seeing this with Google, you're seeing it with all these services that are like, well, yeah, you know, people probably just need a phone with good battery life that runs apps and is small and compact, but we're not going to give it to them. Instead, we're going to upsell them with these like super premium devices that are made of glass that fold. And if you like take them to the beach, they literally don't work anymore because you get a little bit of sand in the screen and it's done for. So I just get really frustrated because I feel like I would even be willing to pay a premium at this point for less, just given the nature of things. But ideally, like a regular smartphone that does 90% of what you need to do nowadays should be $300 tops. And there are a few phones right now that are coming out, but they're still huge and they're massive. And they still have features that I go, what, like, who needs that? Like, just put a better battery in it and make it a smaller phone. So I just wish there were more simple devices out there. And I kind of dislike the pointless innovation, is kind of the way I'm interpreting a lot of it, because like something like a 13 mini does literally everything that like the new Pro phones do outside of like not having as good of cameras and having less battery life and not having Apple Intelligence, which is actually a feature at this point, because Apple Intelligence from everything I've been able to see is pretty useless for most people. So that's my rant. And I really just want to see a basic essential phone that does everything that it just needs to do on a basic level. And then on the other side of things, you have things like the Nothing phone, which do nothing, like literally. So, you know, they don't even run an encrypted messenger. So I just think there's this, I would think that there's a very underserved market right now that's been left by all these companies moving to the extremes of even just trying to make even cheap phones premium and also just doing nothing at this point and charging a premium to do nothing. So that's my rant. And it's kind of a pattern I'm seeing in a lot of things in my life right now. There, like a lot of companies and services seem to be kind of moving towards these polar opposite directions of being either cheap crap or just like do nothing in the context of something like a Nothing phone, or they're just super premium and it forces you to have to pick between the two of them. And I'm seeing less of those like mid-budget options out there. Perhaps it's a reflection of the dying middle class, which isn't even an opinion actually. So, I leave my phone at home most of the time. It's liberating. Yeah, I try to do that as much as I can. Actually, I've been leaving my phone at home just accidentally, and it's actually led to some problems. Yeah. And okay, yeah, so someone mentioned Apple being Apple will literally advertise silicon carbon batteries, one of the best innovations of all time. Yeah, and I mean, that's kind of what frustrates me is that the SE has always been that like mid-tier phone of like, oh, you just need a phone to be a phone, get an SE. And now Apple's dropped that and they have essentially released an SE that tries to like be a premium device in a way. Like they upped the price tag for it. Now it's like pretty expensive for what it is. And while it is still the most like essentials iPhone out there, it's like, I don't know. I just have a lot of issues with the new, like, I even forgot what it's called at this point. I don't want to talk about it anymore. I get upset. Let's see. I got Proton to work in Linux and Pop! OS Cosmic. Just downloaded the dev file and it's almost perfect. Yeah, I think the issue is this person uses Fedora and I don't think Proton has like Fedora packages for things. So that's my guess as to what happened there. Small phone from Eric MacGivoski. What Jose says. Oh, yes, the small Android project is still moving forward. Okay, so I actually remember when this like came out and they originally announced it, and I reached out to them because they said, reach out if you can help. And I was like, well, if I can give any publicity towards this, let me know. And I actually signed this, so I have already signed up for this, but I haven't heard a single update since this happened. But yeah, the whole concept of this is I think they're trying to do like an iPhone 13 mini-ish size, but it runs Android. So yeah, and I haven't heard anything since this happened. So I don't know if there's anything still happening with this. This was written in May 2022, and there's an update, but I haven't gotten any emails about this, and I don't know what they're saying. And let me see if there's anything being posted on this guy's Twitter. Let's see. I didn't know that he did Beeper. That's pretty cool. Yeah, anyway, it could be cool, but until it actually comes out, I'm not gonna count on it. I'm not gonna hold my breath. You can also get a Lightphone 3 and use the Android layer. I'm gonna reach out to you. Actually, Jose, I know that you posted something about that and I saw the video is unlisted, so I'm sure there's some tea there about why that happened. So I'll follow up with you on Signal, Jose, because I'm curious about that and I wanna see what the limitations are, because that could actually be a pretty cool workflow if I'm able to use just Android on a Lightphone, and that way it can run Signal on it and some basic apps. Because I think these things like the Lightphone are cool, but they're way too restrictive and for no reason. Like, I'm not gonna get distracted with a Maps program on my phone, right? Like, I'm not gonna get distracted with my RSS reader because it's already a pretty focused experience. So I'd love to have like a few things, and it already comes de-Googled. So yeah, Jose, I'll reach out to you on Signal, and I would really appreciate some of your help on using the Lightphone with an Android layer. Google's incredibly good software for their photos. Don't even know how Apple, ah, damn it. Don't even know how Apple Intelligence would work on basic devices. Can't run any sensible local AI models on my work MacBook Pro 1, which has 8 gigs of RAM. Even small 1B models run out of RAM. Crazy. Yeah, the 16E, that's what it's called. I know it's crap. Damn, we got thoughts about that phone apparently. It was very insightful. Innovation that is unnecessary or mid-range products not being an option, speaking up against it, what gets things done. Thank you. I'm going to probably buy a Nothing phone when my Pixel completely dies on me. Yeah, the Nothing seems like a pretty good middle ground right now, but I still think it's too big. That's my problem with it. I don't know. This is like stuff I see on Twitter that people make a big deal out of, and it's like, there's like, if you actually want to be upset about things Proton does, there's like so many things that we can list off that I think are much bigger deals than even if this was a concern. Like, assuming this is a concern, it's just not like on the priority list a big concern to me. There is some tea. automatic light and dark at sunrise isn't working for me. Any tips? I'd ask them. I wouldn't know. But that'd be really frustrating for me because I use that every day. It boils down to, I don't think it was a good fit for my channel, but it's good for those that want to tinker. I could see that. Yeah, people get upset, but I don't know. Like, the whole purpose of minimalism to me, right? And I don't, you know your audience better than I do, Jose, but like, the whole point of minimalism is to have exactly what you need. And I feel like the issue with these Lightphone devices is they try to choose what you need for you, and you have to now like change your life for the sake of the phone. But in my view, minimalism is about like better, like having a better relationship with these devices so that they serve you and not the inverse. And I feel like, ironically, when you're using a Lightphone, you actually have to change your own lifestyle a lot because of the phone. Whereas I think you should be able to craft your own lifestyle and like have the phone be configured to match that, if that makes sense. So it's you first, device second. That's my perspective. This could have been an interesting discussion that we had in our interview, actually, Jose. But I think that's where the light phone fails me, because then my life would have to revolve around the phone again, which is the same reason I moved away from a smartphone in the first place, theoretically, is like my life revolved around the phone. So I would love something that's like light phone form factor, but lets me just load exactly what I need on it, and that way it is my phone that's geared towards my lifestyle, without the extra distractions. Yeah, agree for the most. Yeah, interesting. And we should talk about that, because I think it'd be a really cool like discussion, and like to see how people's relationship with devices is different. What services are essential to you? Okay, yeah, so I think it depends, you know, like if we're talking my personal life, not too much. Like a browser, a password manager just to keep up with basic things, probably an email client and Signal. That's like really it. And my RSS reader, I suppose. But then we start migrating over to like, I guess maps. Yeah, there's always something else that comes up. But then over on like the work side of things, I use a crap ton of stuff, but luckily I don't really do much work on a phone, which is why I think it would be super cool to have like maybe just a personal phone that doesn't have work on it, or maybe I could get just bare minimum work stuff on that phone. I've actually been using Beeper recently for work. And so like not for Signal, not for my personal stuff, but for work. It has been life-changing in centralizing these like hundreds, like guys, I have to talk to like hundreds of people on a daily basis. I wish I was kidding, but like in group chats, across all these different ecosystems, across the different like roles that I have in both TechLore, with Cake Wallet, with surveillance support, with all the people I'm emailing, literally hundreds of people on a weekly basis, and sometimes probably 100 or more in a single day. And so using Beeper has like dramatically simplified all of that for me. And my point of saying all of this is that like for work, there's a lot more essentials. For personal, not too much. Using Beeper and setting that up on a light phone would probably like kind of like unify things pretty well for me. My point is, I'm probably gonna order a light phone after this live stream, after I talk to you, Jose. So try to be on Signal if you can. I know you're not on Signal all the time. You use it very intentionally, but I'd love to talk to you about that. Nothing can't afford to make a small phone as a newer company. It just doesn't make sense given most people want larger phones. I agree. Yeah. I agree. It doesn't make sense, but it would be very nice. You make all your silly thumbnails on your phone. I'd love to see that. What like program or like app do you use? Okay, let's go back to the wins. Actually, Signal Group. Samsung will mock Apple with them. Then after a year, Apple will implement it and give it an Apple-branded spin and market them as a revolution. As long as it benefits the users, all okay. Garujo said I missed the fun fact. Let's see here. What was the fun fact? Did I miss it? Advertises innovation. What was the fun fact? I might have missed it. So if you could resend it, that'd be really nice. I guess people won't know that the Pixel Fold is like the only mini Google Pixel ever made, with its obvious caveats aside. Yeah, I'm not willing to admit that a folding device is a small device, sadly. You're gonna have to really convince me hard on that. I know that like the screen real estate wise is like, but it's so thick and they're so fragile and they're so expensive that that already just destroys it for me. Let's see. Yeah, if you could paste it in the Signal group, because it's such a pain in the butt to like find specific messages. Let's see. Let's go back to the wins. So I think this is my last bout of wins, and then I'll just leave myself available for all of you. Quilgorn said they stumbled on the channel. Thanks for the great content. Course, and I'm glad you stumbled on it. And not just wins of the week, but general, as of late, they moved from Windows 11 to Linux Mint. And while their notebook wasn't old, it definitely runs much smoother now. They moved their photo library on their iPhone from there to Entei Photos, really big for cross compatibility. So good stuff. They deleted their Instagram and Reddit account. They moved over to Proton Pass and currently in the process of deleting not needed accounts and changing the email aliases on accounts they want to keep. which is super cool. And they also are touching every account anyway. Since they're touching every account anyway, they're looking if they can enable 2FA using NTAuth. Super cool. And they moved from Apple Notes to Standard Notes. In general, they're trying to move away from Apple's ecosystem. And so that's kind of the next step for them. So congrats, really good stuff there. And like, those aren't small wins. And I am proud of them. Like, really good stuff all around here. And it sounds like you're being very intentional about the changes you're making. So good stuff. Array Pirate. They finally got a local Pi-hole DNS working with their PC, which is essentially a way for you to like filter out content on your devices locally. They tried setting up a local DNS in Mulvad settings, but it never worked. So they downloaded the OVPN file and set it manually using Network Manager. And it's so satisfying to see their requests go through and all the crap being filtered by the Pi-hole. They could watch it all day. Yeah, it's cool to see all the stuff being blocked, and like, it leads to a much better internet experience. So good stuff. They also noticed AI websites, and they provided little to no information, were very superficial and decorated with AI-generated images. They annoyed them so much that they wanted to take advantage of their Pi-hole to block the crap. So they searched the web for block lists specifically for this type of AI-generated website. To their surprise, they were not able to find anything useful apart from a few lists that would generally block anything related to AI. Logical conclusion, create one on your own. So they made an account on Codeberg and started their first repo. Nothing fancy, but maybe some people can take advantage of the list. At the moment, I only sporadically enter websites that catch my eye, but it would be great if others could contribute to the list. Definitely would be cool if you could automate that somehow. It's going to be hard, though, especially as AI sites like do a better job of blending in with regular sites. It's going to be really hard to be able to like distinguish that, but I think it's a really great initiative. And if you have a link to it, it'd be really cool. I don't see a link here, so that'd be really awesome. In addition, they were able to set up Archivebox in a Docker container to save websites that I like or that seem important to me. I like the idea of having my own personal archive that nobody can delete or edit, especially in these times when fascism is on the rise and websites get edited to fit their agenda. Cool, really cool stuff, and like really different wins that I haven't seen before, and very creative on trying to start your own block list. And that is it for the wins. Oh yeah, you did cheat. I closed the thread, but because you have mod privileges, you went ahead anyway and filled it in. So, cheater. But you did get 7 wins, so I'll allow it. So they created a NotesNook account because they wanted to jot down notes relating to one of their upcoming projects. Super cool. Their neurotherapist, who's helping them with neurodivergency, installed Signal. I consider this a huge win, despite I didn't want to say it out loud or say a lot, but she understood my preferences, and that's important, but also huge. Yeah, I think I just generally wish that more like doctors and therapists were a little bit more aware about the privacy and security of messaging platforms, because HIPAA, like a lot of times they have to use things that are HIPAA approved, and I don't think technically Signal is HIPAA approved, which is ironic because it's actually a lot more privacy respecting than other HIPAA approved services. And that's because HIPAA doesn't really speak to things. Like, there's nothing in HIPAA that says it has to be end-to-end encrypted. I don't think it's a HIPAA requirement. HIPAA uses very broad, you know, vague wording, like, oh, it needs to adequately protect user information. Like, that's, if you've ever read HIPAA, that's kind of the way it words things. It's super vague, it's super open to interpretation. And I think that it's nowhere near specific enough for something like a messenger, which needs to have certain requirements to guarantee security for different users. They promised bank transfer donations from the Tor project, and it went through. The promised bank transfer donation to the Tor project went through, and they have a link here if you want verification. The best part is we're number 3 on that collective until more organizations dethrone us, I guess. Let's see how much you gave here. Oh, there you go, 20 euros. Cool, I'm surprised there hasn't been more. Maybe their open collective isn't as popular. Let's see. Oh, we have some organizations here. Oh yeah, but you see, yeah, it's because you guys were an organization. So if you did it individually, you wouldn't have made it, but because you did it as an organization. So that's a good little workaround. So if anyone is an org and they wanna donate to Tor, you know, I'm not trying to throw you under the bus, Garujo, but if someone else, you know, they could be number 3 right now, that would benefit the Tor project. They actually recently started using Rethink DNS for properly encrypted DNS. And a fun tidbit, the developer of Rethink DNS is on our forum, and they're right here, Ignoramus. So yeah, that's pretty cool, and it's really fun to have them there. And they are using Tor or WireGuard with Roton VPN. They considered this aspect a little more, but honestly, they're loving it, and they're pleasantly surprised by the speed with Tor connected. However, they just wish the block lists were updated properly. So, cool stuff. They decided to install an open source habits app to try instead. To be precise, I'm trying LoopHabit and GitHo. I haven't heard of these services, but this is a LoopHabit tracker. Sorry, I didn't show the Tor thing properly. So yeah, you can see the way the organizations look there. And then there's also GitHo, which I have not heard of. Is there any screenshots in the F-Droid? There are, so here's what it looks like. Cool stuff. Yeah, these look like really cool services, so I'm glad you found them, and I hope they help as well. I got my first approved wiki in the Privacy Guides forum, so cool stuff. And then speaking of Kodai, they're heavily considering investing in an SBC, which is a Raspberry Pi 02 watt in this case, and turning it, I think it's watt, right? Someone correct me. And turning it into a Kodai home theater system that's going to live in my living room that I use my legally obtained anime shows. To put onto with backups to be able to play them after ripping. I mean, think about it. I'm going to brag about it and even document it. So cool stuff. And sounds like a ton of good wins this week. And while you didn't get 14 wins, your 7 were very strong. So good stuff all around. And then let's see. Oh, it's 2 Wi-Fi. Got it. Thank you. I'm not super familiar with like the Raspberry Pi naming schemes. So let's see. So they sent me here a Pixel Fold versus an iPhone 13 mini, and it's via GSM Arena. Let's take a look at this. I'll try to pull it up on my screen here. Galaxy Fold, I think I found it. Okay, let me share this. So, this was sent to me by Garujo on Signal. No, this is a versus page. No, this is not what I'm looking for. I clicked the wrong one. Sorry about that. Yeah, GSM Arena. I'm just gonna type in the URL manually, because apparently that's easier than using DuckDuckGo to find it. This is a ridiculous URL to have to type manually. I can't believe this. Okay. I was able to get it up. So, compare specs. Where do I view the 3D size comparison? I know this site does that, but I'm not seeing it here. The tool allows you to compare side by side. Yeah. Where is it? Compare photo samples? No, those are the photos. Okay, I apparently am struggling. Right, am I missing something? Like, I'm not crazy, right? This tool allows you to, but the tool's not loading. Yeah, I guess I'm in Mulvad browser. That might be the issue here. There's no WebGL in Mulvad browser. So, let me see if I can pull it up in Brave. Ooh, Brave has an update. Got it. Yeah. So here is the tool. And then let me see if I can make this a browser window. Okay. Cool. So yeah, it's still bigger though. Like, okay, hear me out. They look close, but even the one screen, that still feels bigger in the hand. Like, even if this was, if you just sliced this in half with a knife and it still worked and this was the phone here, that actually, like, this is so much wider than the iPhone. You can see the width and that you'll definitely feel in your hand, but also the height. Like, I can't express to you how, like, if you're actually trying to use a phone one-handed, anything bigger than a mini, for me at least, and I don't have small hands, but anything bigger than a mini isn't properly going to be like a one-handed device, unless you have big hands. So even that half, but then, you know, when you fold it up, then it's just gonna be a really thick phone. So I don't know. I don't even know if this is like a one-hand device as is, but it is getting there, you know? Like, I think it's a okay solution, but it's definitely not worth twice the cost either, especially for how fragile it is. That's my biggest gripe. Like, you know, these foldable phones new are like almost 2 grand, if not more nowadays, but they're also the most fragile devices that can't even survive basic things that you throw at it. Like going to the beach. Let me go back to the live chat now. Whoa, great show. Whoa, look at all the messages. Okay. Let's see what we got. I'm gonna be on for another like 5 or 10 minutes, I think. I wanna get that video out if possible. I still have to record with Nate today, and I'm trying to have an earlier day so I don't stay up super late. Okay. It's a trash. So this is about the thumbnail. This person edits thumbnails on their phone, and they said it's a trash app, but it's called Photo Layers. It has ads everywhere, but Proton NetShield removes the ads. I'm just more accurate at manually cutting PNG images with my thumb than a mouse. Interesting. That's surprising. Would you not tell us about being in a Minecraft movie? How could you not tell us about being in a Minecraft movie? All right, what are you referencing? I don't know what you're referencing. Maybe you find funny images that aren't those images that have clear-cut borders. So getting images manually always looks better. Got it. Block. You use AI to block AI. Honestly, that might work. Like, if you are able to use AI to block AI, that might do a better job. I've never heard of it, so yeah, sadly, I don't have many thoughts there. I have not on this. Cool. You know, thanks, Neil. Yeah, we're gonna record actually in a couple hours from now. Actually in about an hour. Yeah, we're trying to record earlier today. My favorite surveillance support episode was when Nate deep fried his mic audio. Yeah, dude, if he was online right now, I think he'd get a kick out of that. Yeah, someone actually sent us, they didn't even have the original audio clip. Someone emailed us and they used an AI tool to like clean up the audio that Nate edited already. Like, you guys heard that like deep fried audio. And they like straight up were able to like dramatically fix it to where the point it almost sounded normal. So if they had the original audio that like he recorded off his mic, I think they could have actually almost done it. So I was pretty impressed by that actually. It was pretty cool. I shared my Steam account with a friend. He put in the email as the username instead of the username. The thought it was the password was wrong. He then manually typed the entire 45-digit password. Oh my gosh. That sounds miserable. That's why I like using passphrases for accounts that like I need to share or like manually type a lot. Why do phone manufacturers simply do not provide a smaller phone instead of going the fold flip route? They're more prone to failures and more bulky, whereas people would appreciate the smaller form factor. I don't know. I don't know. I actually don't know. And I feel like you can't convince me that the cost and the premium side of these like foldable phones like makes up for the fact that I think I've seen like 5 of them in the wild. Like, I just never see people have them. I don't hear really anyone talk about these phones. No one gives a shit about them, like, in real life, from what I can tell. The only people that seem to care about them is, like, niche tech communities online and tech reviewers because it's something different than normal. But that's, like, the main place I've seen. And of course, you know, I know someone in the live chat's gonna say, well, I have one. I really like it. Here's why I like it. So I'm not saying there's not a use case for it. I just don't understand why, in any way, shape, or form, there isn't a small budget phone that just does that, because that's a lot more useful for a lot more people than a foldable phone that can also exist in the spectrum of things, but not in a world where it replaces the other thing, because it doesn't, they have two totally different use cases, so it's just frustrating. Gotta do the classic slide the phone halfway down the hand and you can reach the other corner. I would buy a Zenfone 10 if it was cheaper. And even then, the Zenfone 10, I don't think has that much life in terms of security updates. That's why I was turned off by it, if I remember correctly. So if someone can confirm what that was, it'd be really appreciated. trying to change to the Brave browser instead of using Firefox because the new policies Mozilla has made. Your thoughts? It's been a while since that happened, and I don't know. I didn't see anything that would directly impact privacy or security, and I already kind of covered my thoughts in some other content, and I think we talked about it on Surveillance Report as well, so I'd refer to that. I think, you know, if you prefer Brave for a good technical reason, or any other personal reason is fine as well, just make a decision. They're both good browsers, so yeah. Planning to install Fedora on 2015 MacBook. What are your thoughts or any suggestions? Make backups. Have fun. It should work pretty well. There's pretty decent support for that because it's an older device and it's not ARM-based. So good luck, and definitely report it as a win on any platform if you're able to. The main character in a Minecraft movie's name is Henry. Oh, I didn't know that. So that's cool. I saw like trailers for it, I think, but I didn't know it was a Henry. 4 years of security updates, but it was not enough. Yeah, I mean, 4 years is better than I thought it was. But yeah, I don't know. I always like to push phones past 5 years. So I guess I'm being a little nitpicky, but I think for the cost and also the fact that it's 4 years and the fact now it's already a little older, I guess it's a little discouraging for me. And it's not as small as the 13 mini. Yeah. It would be cool to see Lineage on a Zen phone. Yeah. Oh, I see. Yeah. Gurujo did an organization because they split the funds with their friends. So it makes sense. All right. Yeah. I'm going to start doing last calls here. Any final wins? Any final questions? Any final fun things to say? Have you guys had any updates on your ends? I'd love to hear. Like really anything at this point, and I'll kind of just be around for another few minutes, either in the Signal group, in the live chat, pretty much anywhere. I'm pretty tired, so I can't say I'm super disappointed by the less activity right now, because I'm just holding it together, and I got to keep my voice for Surveillance Report too. I think it was a few weeks ago. It wasn't last week's live stream, but I think it was the live stream before that. I skipped a week. That week was super hard to record with Nate. Like, oh my gosh, my throat was just so bad, and I even made tea, and like I just couldn't get my throat to sound okay. But yeah, I guess coming up, I have a fingerprinting masterclass. So that's probably going to go live in the next hour or so. Hopefully I can fit that in and publish before I start recording with Nate. So you guys get to see that and you get to learn some cool stuff about fingerprinting. Again, it's almost 40 minutes. It's a little shy of 40 minutes. And I don't normally say this. I don't normally have this confidence. And this speaks more to the lack of resources rather than how good of a job I did. But I do think it's the best guide I've ever seen on browser fingerprinting. Potentially the best on the internet. And I don't normally say that, but the reason I say that is because I just haven't found anything better. So if you guys find something better, definitely send it my way. But I just haven't seen much discussion about browser fingerprinting, especially like with Nuance, and like most of the takes I see online are like, oh, just use Chrome because then you blend in with everyone else. Or it's like, oh, just use Tor browser because they take it seriously, but you don't see much discussion and like the differences in the approaches between different browsers, how effective they are, why to care about it. And yeah, I'm pretty proud of the video. So I think you guys will like it. Let's see. Daily Podcast has a win. RBQ said, thank you for another great week. Yes, thank you for tuning in. Daily Podcast says, I switched to Proton, currently working on making an approximate shit ton of email aliases and changing them on the services side. Yes, and when you're doing that, check to see if any services have 2FA that have, you know, that they've added since you first signed up. Definitely see if there's any services to delete and set up your aliases, of course. And if there's any weak passwords, then it's time to update them. So just take advantage of that. Good luck with that. And also congrats on the switch. Let's see, Brendan, why is non-KYC so damn hard to get? Yeah, I mean, KYC is the default. And if you want tips, KYC Not Me, if you haven't heard of it before, let me pull it up for you guys. That's not right. That's my live stream portal. Let's see. Here we go. It's called KYCNot.me, not KYC Me not. Okay, kycnot.me. And then it'll give you like tons of different ways to essentially avoid KYC. It's a really cool service, and I have had a lot of luck using it. Let's see. Final thing to say, go Henry, go. Privacy for the win. Yes, thank you, Neil. Thank you for always tuning in. Of course, everyone for tuning in. Let's see. Just installed Proton VPN on Debian, Linux Mint Debian Edition. Nice. And now Henry is getting demonetized right at the end. Yes. No, I think I'm allowed to show it. There's nothing like revealing about that. I try to close all windows that could potentially reveal sensitive things before a live stream. So the only real problem I've got is my healthcare providers, et cetera, doesn't support 2FA for some godforsaken reason. Yeah, that's unfortunate. Just do your best. I've been generating passwords authorized, so all good. Cool. And then M asks, with you experimenting with Zen Browser, do you think you might make content about it? It's possible. I feel like if I'm going to make content about it, it's going to be about Zen in general, not really my relationship with it, mainly because my use case for Zen is so niche and like doesn't speak to many people, I think. Like I already explained earlier how I'm pretty much using it to keep up with a ton of accounts just because it has like the UI where I can just click between accounts and it uses Firefox containers behind the scenes to allow me to separate things. So I might speak about that and my use case for it in a bigger, more broad applicable video, like if I do a full review of Zen or maybe I do a browser comparison. But other than that, I can't imagine making a video just talking about that one use case for Zen. Just because it's, you know, I don't think that's most people's use case for it. But yeah, that's kind of my stance on it so far. But again, I'm kind of new to it. I'm still like learning it. Maybe I'll have more use case for it down the road. It's something I started using like within the last couple weeks. So it's very new to my workflow. So I'll keep you updated as I do these podcasts or these streams. Jaden says, see you next week. Brendan says, I'm going Bitcoin ATM under limit, then BISC, but gotta get burner, et cetera, et cetera. So much work. Yeah, it's not always easy. And frankly, you know, the way I do it typically, if there isn't an easy way and I need just cryptocurrency for whatever reason, I don't mind typically going KYC through Bitcoin or like a light KYC. It's pretty easy to get like Bitcoin with like a credit card or a debit card. And it's like light KYC, and then you can just convert it to Monero. I don't care too much. My threat model isn't that sensitive where like I don't mind being KYC'd on an on-ramp and then like kind of just converting it to Monero, and then everything from there is pretty much like private and it's pretty hard to link that back to the original transaction. So that's personally my stance on it. M said, gotcha, thanks. Yep. Cool. Well, I'm going to start logging off. Again, I want to thank all of you for tuning in. I want to thank all of our patrons, our Techlorians. You guys are all awesome for supporting this work. And I really hope you guys enjoy the fingerprinting masterclass. That's going to drop very shortly. And I'm very happy about it. And so if you find it useful, definitely share it around because like I don't think there's enough discussions about fingerprinting. And hopefully that sheds a lot of light. And I also want to thank you all for just tuning in and being active and leaving your comments. And I really appreciate it. It's always fun. And I think that's all I have. So if you want to get involved, again, join the forum and leave your wins for next week's stream on the following Friday. We do these every Friday. And if you want to get ultra involved and really support what we're doing, then also become a Techlorian. You can do that via Patreon. You can do it through YouTube, through our memberships program on YouTube. Or you can do it on... did I say Patreon already? It's Patreon, the forum, and YouTube. So check them all out. They're always in the description. See you all next time on TechLore.